Okay, welcome everybody. Please take your seats. This flight to Nibbana is about to take off. Okay, this is the ongoing meditation class for those of you who have come for the introduction to meditation, a new set of four lessons starting today. That is being held in the room to my right, where people can just explore the beginnings, the basics of meditation for the first time. Here we expect people to have done some meditation before, so at least they know how the basics and they know what to do, because I only focus on one aspect of the meditation every Saturday afternoon, and then we do maybe a 40-minute meditation afterwards. So this is actually more for those who have a little bit of experience. So monks, you can go next door. No, I'm only joking. They're very good monks. So what I'm going to be focusing on today is on patience in meditation. Because it does take a while for the mind to slow down and come to a state of peacefulness. You can't suddenly just turn off the mind and stop, you know, like putting on the brakes of a car very quickly. Because if you do that in a car, you go through the windscreen. And a similar thing happens in your meditation. You just go a bit crazy because you're forcing, stopping too fast. So usually what happens in meditation, we actually just turn off the gas of the car. And we don't turn on the brakes or push down the brakes, we just turn off the fuel supply. And when you turn off the fuel supply, you know just after a while your vehicle will lose all its momentum because of friction. It will come to a very gentle and soft halt, stop. And so that's actually what meditation is. And how we turn off the fuel supply which keeps our mind going all over the place, is called wanting. When you want something, it's like just giving a big boost to the mind of energy, of doing things, of activity. And that is one of the reasons why we never find stillness. So we turn off all the wanting. Sometimes people get to the end of their life and they don't want anything else. And a lot of time they get a bit more peaceful. Then elderly people have a little bit of an advantage there for meditation, because you don't want stuff anymore. You've been there, done that. But for the rest of us, and of course I'm not one of the old ones, I'm in denial about that, for most of us, there's always something more that we want. And that is what drives our mind. The simile which Ajahn Chah always gave, which I repeat during meditation retreats. In those days there weren't no visual aids, so he had to make up whatever he had at hand, literally, because he used his hand. And he would wave his hand up and down, and he said, "This represents a leaf on a tree. The leaf on a tree only moves because of the wind. If the wind stopped, the leaf, it wouldn't go still altogether. It would move less and less and less. And over time, if no more wind came, then the leaf would eventually, after time, become perfectly still." He said that was his simile. Leaf only moves because of the wind stops, and eventually the leaf stops moving. That is like, he said, the human mind. The human mind is like the leaf, always moving. And we can experience that moving by our thoughts, by our emotions, by all these plans, these memories of the past, these thinking of the future. That's all the symptoms of a moving mind. So, when the mind slows down, the thoughts get less. They become less forceful, softer, and eventually they just dry up simply because the leaf isn't moving that much anymore. Your mind becomes still. My old simile, the thoughts, emotions are just the waves on the surface of a lake. When you're really upset, psychotic, really angry, you've got a storm on that lake and the waves are huge, they're like tsunamis. But when you calm down a bit, yeah, there's still waves on the surface of the lake, but they're small waves. And when you're really peaceful, they're just a few ripples, that's all. So that is the simile of the leaf. It only moves because of the wind, and you have to stop the wind and then be patient. And just watch and let the mind to slow down all by itself. And so when you do letting go of wanting, you don't want anything, this is good enough for me, you open the door of your heart to this moment, whatever it is, without any discrimination, if you allow it to be, if you let go of all wanting, then you find little by little your mind becomes still. However, one of the biggest problems is that people keep interrupting the process. In other words, the other simile which I often use is a cup of water, holding a cup of water still. If you want water to be still, instead of actually holding it, which never gets still, you have to put it down, let it go, and it becomes still all by itself. Now the problem with impatience is after a few seconds, is it still yet? No, not yet. And then you carry on meditating, still yet? No. A few more moments, come on, are you still? Come on. And then you say, oh, it's not working, maybe I should put it over here. No, that's not good, so I'll put it over here. Still not, sorry, I must be having the wrong place, maybe on this side it's better. And of course you're always doing something, no, not yet. Which means, of course there's another way of getting the water to be still. One of the reasons I poured it out in the first place. That's much better. I needed that. So, but the real way of being still is just leave it alone and be patient. However, many people, even I meditate like this, it works a treat every time. But for some people, they say it doesn't work. It is because you must be interrupting it, which is where I get the two types of waiting. And it's a nice little insight for you. The two types of waiting. The first type of waiting is called waiting in the future, which means waiting for something to happen, which means you're not really patient at all. Your eyes are looking, when's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? It's going to happen now. No, it's going to happen now. I want it to happen now. It must happen now. That's called waiting in the future. It's not patience at all. There's still some wanting going on there. Still some desiring. Things which move your mind and stop it becoming still. If you're waiting in the future, you'll find peace never comes. I know for a lot of people that's all they ever do in life, always waiting for something to happen. Waiting for the next beautiful movie to be released, waiting to go on holiday, waiting for the weekend, when the weekend comes, waiting for Monday to go back to work again, waiting in the traffic, waiting to get to work, on an aircraft, waiting to land. And when you, it's amazing this, I've always noticed this, because I travel a lot. See all these people at the airport, checked in, waiting for the boarding. And those people who get on the plane first, they can't wait to get on the plane. They're queuing up. And then those same people, as soon as the plane lands, they're queuing up to get out first. I thought, if you want to get on first, you must like the aircraft, so you should come out last. So, no, first on, last out. I think that should be in. Last on, first out. I think that makes more sense to me. But no, they want to get on early and they want to leave early because they're impatient. So here in the meditation, we just wait. Not in the future, not waiting for something to happen, but waiting right now, or like waiting on this moment. I think that's a very beautiful word, waiting on this moment, just like a waiter. I just saw on the newspaper that poor old Manuel from 40 Towers passed away. So, so he was one of the best waiters in the world, good old Manuel from Barcelona. He wasn't actually from Barcelona, because I knew the family, he's from Chiswick. If you want to know, so Manuel from 40 Towers was from Chiswick. Spoke perfect English as well. Anyway, waiting on the moment is being very, very, like a good waiter, very aware in this moment of what that customer needs, where he is or she is at the meal, whether it's time for the next course, whether it's time to clear up, always in this present moment. So that is what I call like waiting in this moment or on this moment rather than waiting in the future. And if you can notice that, you'll see that a lot of the problems in meditation is because we're not patient in the proper way. And when we want to be patient, just leave it alone, it will happen. Instead of looking in the future for something to happen, waiting in the future, we wait in this moment instead. Really experiencing what's happening now and being patient there. Because that patience is the contentment, that patience is just the non-doing, that patience is being a passenger. And then after a while you can trust that when you don't, the wind of wanting is not blowing, it's only a matter of time before the mind becomes very still and peaceful. And it is. And you give it that time. The time for the car to slow down and come to a stop. And it's a very beautiful process to watch. Especially when you do that long enough and you trust it as much as I do, because it works, that it's so easy. You sit down and just wait for the mind to slow down, not interrupting it, not waiting in the future, but being patient enough to give it time for the engine to cool down, for the wheels to stop spinning, and for the vehicle of your mind to come to a perfect halt. And that's very beautiful to witness. So that's a little thing about patience. So, now is the time to do some practice. So if you like to get yourselves in your meditation postures. Whoops. And as usual, I will lead the first 20 minutes or so, and then you'll be off by yourself. Very good. So closing your eyes. And to prepare for meditation, we've got to be in a very good physical position first of all. So bring your awareness to your body. First of all, I go through my body every time, making sure my legs are okay, and my bottom is comfortable. I've got my back in a good position. The hands are okay. And the head well balanced. It's also, it's making sure my posture is comfortable. It's also arousing the first parts of mindfulness. Awareness on my body with some kindness. Kindness means I will change my posture if it's going to make my body more comfortable. Usually finish off with my head. And this is a simple example, just I become aware of muscles around my eyes. I learn how to just relax them, so that my eyes are not screwed down tight, they're loose. And I can be mindful of the feeling around my eyes. And in my forehead as well. So around the forehead and the eyes, they are totally at ease, loose, and not being, no muscle is being pulled. Nothing is being squashed. It's all open and free. Sometimes I visualize like a sponge, which is not squashed anymore. It's all light and fluffy, like the muscles around my eyes and in my forehead. Loose, light, free. No tension, no stress on it at all. I let all those muscles just open out and relax. Once that body is relaxed through physical adjustment, as I always say, my next level of mindfulness and kindness again stays with my body. As I choose one particular area of the body, usually something inside, an irritating throat, an ache in the arm, or a tummy ache, whatever you have, and just allow your mindfulness to focus on it, zoom in on it, to the exclusion of every other feeling in your body. And as you become more and more aware of just this small part of your body, you notice that that feeling does change. And you soon associate perceptions, the way you look at these things, as a cause for that irritation or pain getting worse, or for that discomfort easing off. And you will discover, just as the Buddha kept on saying, that if you let things be, if you embrace this irritation or pain, if you open the door of your heart to it, if you're kind to it, the irritation or pain gets less. You are more at peace, more relaxed, free of irritation or pain. And the job of mindfulness is to show you this happening. It gives you the feedback, which allows you to learn every time how to relax, to ease, and free these small parts of the body from pain. And I stay with that small area until the irritation or pain is just so reduced, most times it just goes. And you're free. And then I usually go look for another part in my body which needs some attention, which needs some deep relaxation just through my mind to that part of the body. Feel it, let it be, and relax it. Really feeling my body. Because I'm focusing on the physical feelings in my body rather than thoughts, futures and pasts, it means I'm also weakening the hold of thinking on my mind. I'm feeling instead, aware of my body rather than the thoughts about it. I can become so aware of my body, you can relax almost anything. And I enjoy doing that because I get quick, easy, wonderful results. And you can feel those results. A body which is truly relaxed. Once your body is as relaxed as you possibly can make it, and any more focus on the body, you get a bit bored and start wandering off in thought again, then it's a time to switch to your mental world, the world of the emotions and the thoughts of the past and the future. You can imagine your mind, as I was mentioning earlier, like a lake. Thoughts, like the waves on the surface of the lake, their speed across the surface of the lake being a measure of your emotions. When you visualize your mind something like that, you can become more aware of just how peaceful you are or how agitated. It's learning how to be mindful of the right thing which creates success in meditation. So be aware of what I keep calling these days the peaceometer. How peaceful are you? Or how agitated is your mind? And be honest. And then just like relaxing the muscles in your body, what makes that mind more agitated? What makes these waves less, the thoughts less intense, slower, softer, until they vanish? How does that work? You'll find letting be, opening the door of your heart to this moment, and of course, patience, waiting in this moment, not waiting for something to happen. Waiting in the now. It's only when you get to a certain level of peace, and only you can recognize how deep that peace should be before you go focusing on your breathing. Leave that awareness of the peaceometer too quickly and go on to the breath, and you cannot maintain your awareness of the breathing except with struggle. It's not pleasant. Calm down very deeply, and then when you look to your breath, just breathing in and breathing out, it's the easiest thing in the world to do. You don't need to put force into focusing on the breath. It's easy. And it becomes delightful. You have to have that ease, first of all, for the delightful breath to arise. If you go too soon, use force. It's never delightful. You're not peaceful enough. I am now going to be quiet. I need to adjust my posture too. And then just carry on until the end of the meditation.
getting close. Getting close to the end of the meditation now. How do you feel? Having been patient, how calm is that lake? How relaxed is the body? How peaceful are you? Oh, now ring the gong 3 times. At the end of the 3rd ringing, come out from your meditation. Okay, there we go. Okay, so the internet's working now, so we have some questions from overseas. Very good, here we go. Ooh, from New Zealand, from Germany, and from Italy. I've got a very good audience here. First of all, from New Zealand. What if we feel like continuing the meditation for some time, even after the gong rings? Go for it. I hated gongs when I was a young meditator. We used to go on these retreats, and there were some times I was really restless. My legs and my back was aching, and they would not ring the gong. So I thought of all these little tricks which I could do. One of the tricks was to get a little pea shooter or a little slingshot, you know, just a rubber band between like 2 sticks, and just while everybody had their eyes closed, just getting a pebble or something and bong, so I could ring the gong from a distance, so I could end it earlier. And there was other times when, oh, you're just really getting peaceful and still. So calm, and gong! And oh, that was just really disappointing. And I often say from New Zealand, imagine what would have happened if there had been bells under the Bodhi tree when the Buddha was sitting there. He would have never got enlightened. So I don't really like gongs, but I have to do it here because this is, people have stuff to go to. So, please carry on after the gong rings if you possibly can, and just enjoy it. So the gong is just a reminder for many people that it's 4 o'clock and it's time to carry on with something else. So carry on if you can. From Germany, it is proven that sitting at the desk at your 9-to-5 workplace is bad for one's health. How is sitting in meditation or longer times of retreats different from that? Woo-hoo! Number one, you haven't got an iPhone, you haven't got a boss, you haven't got all this work coming along, you haven't got stress when you're meditating. So, sitting at your desk from 9-to-5, if you can, sit at your desk from 9-to-5, with your eyes closed, with the right hand over the left hand, with your eyes closed, just meditating from 9-to-5. Oh, what a wonderful work that would be. However, you probably get the sack after a couple of hours. So it is not the sitting at your desk which is bad for your health. It's actually the stress which is bad for your health. And it's the stress is caused not from so much your posture, because you can get some very comfortable chairs to sit in at your office. Same as you can get comfortable stools, or like many people do, sit against the wall when they're meditating. Those are the best places, I often say. In any Dhamma center, Buddhist center I've ever been to, it's the places where you can lean back against the wall or against the windows or whatever. Those are usually taken up first of all. You see all the people who've been there a long time, they get those seats first of all. Because you can lean back and it's comfortable. But it's not the sitting, it's what you do in your mind when you're sitting. Somebody showed me a TED talk, TED channel talk, I agree with this little insight of a psychologist who did some research. Why is it that cardiac diseases are associated with stress? So she took a lot of, as many bosses, executives were in stressful positions as she possibly could find. And she noticed that not all of them get cardiac disease, even though they have the same amount of stress at work. And so they wanted to find out what the difference was. Really just important jobs, a lot of work, a lot of extra time. Why did some people get cardiac disease and some didn't? And being a psychologist, it was very, very clear to her that it was not the work which caused cardiac disease, it was the way they related to the work, the negativity they imposed or added on to their workload. Those executives which were very happy, yeah, give me some more work, I can do this, it's a challenge, it's worth being done, yeah, come on, give me some more. Those who had a positive attitude to their workload never got cardiac disease. But those people who kept saying, why me? Why do I have to keep on doing this? Don't people know that they should do better than this? Why are they always coming up to me? Don't they know I'm busy? Those are the people who get cardiac disease. It's not the work, it's the attitude. Now that is important for us to notice, because the work which we have to do, sometimes we cannot control it. I can't control my workload. When you're a boss, any problem, any stuff which comes along, you just have to take it and do something with it. Because, you know, I don't control those things. What I can control is how I react to it. So that is actually the difference. In meditation, you're training your mind to have this very beautiful positive attitude, letting things be, which means you don't get sick. Lastly from Italy, when I am torn away from peaceful meditation by interruption, I sometimes have a lot of regret or frustration, and even suffering in the form of physical tension which will take ages to go away. Instead of peace, I'm left with much agitation. Any advice on dealing with this? Yes, from Italy. It is because you were off into the future with expectations. When I meditate, I never know how long I can meditate for. You know, you're sitting down here, calm and peaceful, and something happens, there's a big noise, or you know, somebody dies, or sometimes some crazy person comes to the temple. There's all sorts of stuff happens here. And of course, you guys can carry on sitting, but I'm one of the bosses who have to deal with that. So, the way that you never get torn away from peaceful meditation, you're ready to let go at any time. So you never get torn away because you're not attached. To be torn away, you have to be stuck to something, and then it's tearing it away. When your mind sort of rests on the meditation, just like a leaf which falls from the tree, say onto the bonnet of your car, and you just, a little wind just blows it away. It's not stuck, it never gets torn off. It just sort of very gently just moves away. So if you can imagine like being a leaf, when you're meditating, falling off from the world, you settle somewhere, but if the world needs you, then you can move at any moment, any time, without any regret. It has to be that you are getting stuck, attaching to the peace, which means it's not really peace, because
You have to pay for that when something happens and you have to let it go. So if you practice like letting go all the time, just open the door of your heart to whatever happens, that kindness, that peace, not only do you get very, very still and very peaceful, but when something happens you have to come out, it's just so easy, just get up and go and do it. And it leaves no residue. This is one of the ways of letting go taught by the Buddha. It's called Analaya. Things which leave no residue. So as soon as the past is finished, it's gone. It leaves no residue. So you're disturbed because you have to come out of your meditation. Yeah, maybe a little bit of discomfort for a second or two, but then it's gone, it's the past. You totally let go every moment. This moment now is the most important one in the world. A moment ago when you were meditating, it's gone already. So you never regret anything. You never look back and think, oh, why did that happen? Because you never ever look back in meditation. Nor do you ever look forward. You just look right here, right now. And in that moment, there can never be any regret. There can never be any plans which get disappointed. So when you lose the present moment, that is when you get in trouble. That is when you get disappointed because you had an expectation of the future. That is when you have regret because, oh, I want to go back there. Real meditation is just letting every moment be. If there's nothing to do, do nothing. If there's something to do, then do it. Simple as that. Okay, so those are questions from overseas, and I'm sure that's from New Zealand, Germany and Italy. I'm sure we can get better questions than that from Australia. Can we? Can you outdo those questions? No. Oh, yes. Okay, we have one. Oh, from Eddie. Okay, a question, Eddie, but not sort of a statement.
It's an experience, Ajahn Brahm.
An experience? You, no. Questions.
Okay. Yeah. It's a question. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, the topic that you mentioned about patience.
Expectations. Yes.
Yeah. In fact, I told you this thing. You know, you see, I look after my mother.
Yeah.
There was, you know, old people. It's not easy, isn't it? Okay.
Oh, it's easy. Old people are really cute.
And you have a lot of patience. You know.
There was
one incident where she hurled abuse at me.
Excellent.
And it was so difficult.
Wow.
I just lie down, and bliss arose in me. Intense bliss, you know.
Bliss?
Yes, yeah.
Well, wow, because you're being scolded.
Maybe you know, yeah.
Okay, intense bliss. I'm going to have to try that some more.
And then it was beautiful.
Good.
It calmed it down, me. And then after that, I went to speak to her. I said, "Mom," and she answered me as though nothing happened at all.
Yeah, excellent. That's because you let it go.
Yeah.
So next time, just please ask elderly people to scold you some more. Then you get more bliss. Yeah, it's true, because you let it go. You never allowed it to bother you. And when you let go, you always get a lot of bliss. Okay, that's not a bad question. Another one over here. Yes, you've got to wait for the lollipop to come, for the ice cream cone. Here it comes.
Just a quick one. You talk about the gong. Sometimes the gong is probably easier than with no gong.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that sometimes when we meditate, we've got no time limit, that's fine. And remember that if we do, that say we have wake up at 4 o'clock.
Yes.
I've had to go to work or something. I remember last time I did raise questions, you did mention that we programmed our mind beforehand.
Ah, so yes.
Work out four. That's fine. You know, say we've got 1 hour, one and a half hours, it's easier. Sometimes if you do have 20 minutes, say during the lunchtime, how do we manage that? Because if we get into deep meditation, it's pretty hard, 20 minutes. Don't get deep enough into meditation? How do you actually manage that?
If it's a short meditation, it's unlikely you get into deep meditation, but not impossible. But what you were saying there is an old trick in meditation. You program your mindfulness, by which I mean when you start meditating, you tell yourself, I have to come out after 20 minutes. I have to come out after 20 minutes. I have to come out after 20 minutes. Whatever the time is, repeat it to yourself 3 times, then forget about it and meditate. And it's amazing, you will come out after 20 minutes. It's just the way this mind works. And if any of you want to experiment with that, if you haven't done this already, I'm not quite sure what time you have to get up tomorrow morning. Say it's like the monks, 4 o'clock tomorrow morning on a Sunday morning. It's a great time actually to get on the internet in the morning because there's no traffic that time in the morning. You get very good connections. But 4 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock, whatever time, anyone here else gets up at 4 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday morning? You do. Wow, you're really, well, because you were in a monastery as well, another crazy person like us. But most people, getting up 4 o'clock on a Sunday morning is ridiculous. But suppose you get up, say, 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning, tomorrow morning. That's your time you're going to get up. Set your alarm to 8:05. 5 minutes after you want to get up. And when you go to bed, you tell yourself, you know, when you're tucked in before you go to sleep, I will wake up at 8 a.m. 3 times to yourself, repeat it, and see what happens. And if you've never done this before, it's amazing. You're sleeping there and you wake up, you open your eyes, haven't got a clue what time it is, and you look at your clock, and it is 8 o'clock. Don't know how your body does that, but it does it really, really well. That gives you confidence. What it gives you confidence is that you can program the mind. And that also works, sometimes I do that, if I'm a very busy monk, I have to ring up the monastery at 3 p.m. And I don't go writing it down or tying strings around my finger. I used to try that once. I tried a string around my finger to make me remember. Then later on, what's that string around my finger for? It doesn't work. You tried that before. So, instead of writing notes to myself what I'm supposed to do, that's how I do it. I just say to myself, 3 p.m. tomorrow afternoon, I must call up monastery. 3 p.m. tomorrow afternoon, I must call up monastery. 3 p.m. tomorrow afternoon, I must call up my monastery. And then I forget about it. And it's amazing just how well that is. You're busy doing something else that time, and then the thought comes up, oh yeah, I've got to ring monastery up. Your mind is incredible, just the way it can be programmed. And that means you don't have to worry about things. You don't have to have all these notes and everywhere. Oh, please remind me, I've got to ring up the monastery. Can you remind me that tomorrow? You forget to. I usually have to remind him to remind me. But when you program the mind, you remember really, really easily. So it's a very good trick to develop, and it stops a lot of worrying about I have to do this, I have to do that. What happens if I forget? So that's also coming out whenever you want to meditation. Set the time, and it works incredibly well.
Thank you.
Yes, we have one over here. Okay, the lollipop. Faster, 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 faster.
Very interesting that you're mentioning time, but I notice you're not wearing any wristwatches.
Yes.
How do you keep track of the time? Because in this hall, I cannot see a clock on the wall. So, oh, I see.
I'm honest. I've got a clock here, and there's one over there as well.
Okay.
The reason I got this one over here is because there's certain times of the day, usually in the afternoon, the light from the back over there shines in the clock on the wall. You can't see what the time is. So that's what it is. So, I'm cheating. Very good. Okay, so I think that's enough for today. So thank you all for coming. And I hope you have lovely meditation when you go back home. And if you have any more questions, there are 3 monks you can ask today. And who knows, you might get some really great answers you never had from me. Okay, here we go. Bow 3 times, first of all.
Yes, I intend to.